to investigate the question of the relationship between common good and the republic in Leibniz's political philosophy. Expressions such as common good, common happiness, common security, common purpose frequently appear in different fields, from politics to jurisprudence and economy. In particular, when Leibniz analyzes the political dimension, he insists on the notion of the common. The decisions must be taken commonly, and also luck, just as unluck, must be common. So the political community emerges as a union of different men for a common purpose. According to Leibniz, every rational man must agree that the government aims at common good. My definition of the state, or of that which the Latins call res publica, is that it is a large society whose end is the common security. Not only the large number of passages in which the adjective common appear are relevant, but also the importance this notion has when it connotes the basic elements of politics. The Republic, Res Publica, and the related government must work for common good. Ever since the first writings, justice, a central concept from Leibniz, is seen as a constant endeavor towards common happiness. Between the existence of a political sphere and the presence of common good, there seems to be an unbreakable relationship. The first is based on collaboration for common utility, conspirare in communem usum. But as it finds its own origin in the whole of reality, the relevance of common does not only concern politics, strictly speaking. Each thing, Leibniz says, is directed following the maximum common good or common happiness, and is subject to a law of justice, which dictates that each person shall take part in the perfection of the universe and in one's own happiness, according to the measure of his own virtue and the degree to which his will is directed toward the common good. The individuation of a close connection between the elements of the universe presents at the same time a metaphysical, theological, and political aspect. For universal harmony, glory of God, and common good interpenetrate strongly. To emphasize the decisive importance of common good in the political sphere, however, does not mean conceiving such a notion in opposition with that of individual good. Those elements must be understood according to a real interpenetration. The science of the just and of the useful, as Leibniz says, that is of public and private good, involve each other, and one can only be difficultly happy in a crowd of fools. In Nova Methodus, Leibniz praises Plato for having put in many passages the foundation of the right in to koinex inferon, the public utility. In this way, happiness can be imagined in a scenario marked by a public utility, and certainly not in a crowd of fools that contrast the idea of common good. Such remarks are based on the existence of a constant exchange between private good and public good, and more generally between own and other. We must partake, Leibniz claims, in the happiness of those around us, as in our own, seeking neither our pleasure nor our interest in what is contrary to the common happiness. And finally, we must consider what the public wants from us, and what we ourselves would want if we were to occupy the place of others. From the emphasis on the interpenetration of the concept mentioned above emerges the importance of the place of others questions that represent the true point of perspective in politics as well as in morality. Focusing the analysis on the place of others means bringing to life a reciprocity of own and other. We are not only facing a mediation between individual needs and general needs, but we are also facing, more radically, the belief according to which the common dimension is central for the political constitution of individuality itself. In any case, the notion of common good can never be explained by the reference to authority, being part, as previously underlined, of reality as a whole. In the latter, each thing leads to common good according to a law of justice. The common can never be brought down to justification of the sovereign power, since a common good does not identify with any juridical and political organization. No sovereign can found ex novo neither commonality nor justice, as they exist in the structure of things independently for every mechanism of power. Common good is not created by a specific political community, but as an autonomous relevance. What is more, a political setup cannot neglect this common element, which must characterize the political body as much as possible. There is a strong dispute against those who identified justice and power as being linked, confusing right and law, and thus stopping every possibility of connection between individuals. The actions of the sovereign, if taken without reference to common good, lead to the destruction of the right, and so of a rational life in common. The most important controversy is offered by Thomas Hobbes, who wished, so Leibniz says, to uphold almost the same thing as Thrasymachus, to say that just is whatever pleases the most powerful, is nothing else than saying that there is no certain and determined justice. Since justice is rooted in the structure of things, becoming a de jure issue and not merely a de facto one, be understood as whatever pleases the most powerful. The mention of common good in its metaphysical foundation shows traces of the political Aristotelian tradition. At that time, still present in the German universities. many elements show that the political Aristotelianism differs from Hobbes and Pufendorf's contractualism. In particular, one of his characteristics resides in the valorization of common good and justice, from which emerges a wide conception of politics that tend to happiness. It must be noted, however, that the relevance of common good does not imply a motionless vision of reality. Though that matter, it seems meaningful to quote a passage of Elementa Juris Naturalis. According to Leibniz, happiness is the best state of the person, because the good is in progress to infinity, progressus in infinitum. The best state consists in an unobstacled progress towards ever greater goods. The suspension of desire, i.e., the state in which nothing is desired, is not peace but torpor. Here, the good is not considered in a static way as a stable possession. On the contrary, it is based on the continuous tension of progress to infinity. However, it must not be forgotten that in Leibniz's metaphysics, substance is defined a being that is capable of action. So the reference to this element is fundamental to understand the individual dimension. Recognizing the relevance of action results in the movement towards ever great goods, and so towards the improving and the perfecting of humankind and at the same time of every single individual. The continuous approach to good is in that way a progress to infinity. A constant, never-ending progress is characteristic of the structure of reality that appears turned to a better condition compared to the past. From this point of view, a valorization of the evolution of the events of the pre-Enlightenment sort can be witnessed, but the connection with Enlightenment requires some clarifications. In Leibniz's reflection, sure enough, progress will never find complete fulfillment. It can only be in infinity, as the result it leads to will not be without errors and imperfections. The tension mentioned above presents improvement, but also regressions and defeats, as emerges in Apocatastasis, where Leibniz writes that it could happen that things gradually, though imperceptibly, progress toward the best after revolutions. Although things often seem directed to the worst, it must be believed that this happens because at time we regress in order to jump with greater impetus. In such a framework, the existence of the negative of evil is not denied, and so neither is that of obstacles that are in the way of the aimed targets. Unlike the Enlightenment, the succession of events is in Leibniz marked by times of crisis, of regression. The contradictions can never be completely overcome. From this point of view, Leibniz uses a Baroque discursive flow based more on chiaroscuro than on a blinding luminosity capable of lightening every dark part. The inseparability of lightness and darkness, the lack of a clear definition of the boundaries, reveal characteristics that distinguish the Baroque style and its complex levels and references. As a result of the revolutions, mint here etymologically as a form of going back to the origin, it appears possible to consider a scenario marked by constant progression towards the acquisition of new knowledge, able to give happiness to individuals. Actually, supreme happiness, Leibniz says, can never be complete. Our happiness will not and should not ever consist of a mind-numbing complete enjoyment, but rather in a perpetual progression towards new pleasures and new perfections. At this point, it seems clear that the notion of progress is not used to indicate, above all, the superiority of the present time in comparison with the past, different from how it was considered during the Enlightenment. It is rooted, on the one hand, in a metaphysical and theological foundation, and, on the other, in a physical and mathematical one. The origin of his incompleteness is in the impossibility to know God in his infinity. The idea of progress to infinity also appears connected to such an observation about the essential boundaries of man. Progress is part of the structure of monadology itself, as the monad must expand, grow, strengthen its own region of expression, unfolding its own folds to infinity. But to the metaphysical theological root, we have to add another, the physical mathematical one, on which Leibniz's conceptual construction, heir of the Copernican revolution, in the multiple possibilities that it opens, interprets progress to infinity in a reality full of changes. But reflecting about progress is not only a concern of metaphysics and theology on the one hand, and of physics and mathematics on the other. It also assumes a strong ethical and political meaning. To this matter, it is necessary to go back to the decisive passage of Elementa Juris Naturalis quoted above. In this work, centered on natural law, the fact that there is an observation on progress to infinity is very significant. The latter presents an ethical and political importance, as it is in relation with the concept of good in its constant attention to improve. Happiness, intended as a continuous progression towards new pleasures and new perfections, cannot exist without disquiet. As Leibniz says clearly in Nouveau Essai sur l'entendement humain, far from such disquiet, being inconsistent with happiness, I find that it is essential to the happiness of the created beings. Their happiness never consists in a complete attainment, but in continual and uninterrupted progress toward greater goods. Such progress is inevitably accompanied by desire, or at least by a constant disquiet. Since happiness resides in an exhaustible improvement of knowledge, His distinctive sign is represented by an uneasy dynamism. So the happiness, progress, disquiet connection is one of the central parts of Leibniz's reflection. In German, the word for the balance of a clock is Unruhe, which also means disquiet. There is disquiet even in joy, for the latter makes a man alert, active, hopeful of further success. Disquiet means a constant research to better the existing conditions, because it urges the individual to industry and thus to action. Without impulse, the tension capable of turning man towards better goods and more knowledge decreases. The political form theorized by Leibniz cannot either be characterized by a suspension of desire. It is now necessary to relate this valorization of dynamism with the emphasis on common good. Indeed, the latter cannot be understood independently for the continuous process of developing one's own potential. The reference to progress makes it possible to interpret the notion of common good not in a substantialistic or static way, but keeping its conceptual tension open. If the progress to infinity of good that the Elementa Juris Naturalis speaks about exists, such words must be used to define common good, itself a determination of good. Pointing out the importance of common good does not imply its static hypostatization. In any case, Leibniz's political philosophy not only leads to a mediation between the individual dimension and the common one, but more radically to the idea that the common is central for the political constitution of individuality itself. Leibniz's reflection is directed toward a political form that maintains in its dynamism the tension between individual and common good. The coincidentia oppositorum individual and common is not presupposed but developed by means of a process. When Leibniz analyzes the question in a political way, he identifies the concept of republic as the element that is better suited to explain the interpenetration of the individual and on the common sphere, enhancing the multiplicity of social circles and contexts, according to the idea of unity in plurality, in contrast with the reductio ad unum carried out by Hobbes and Pufendorf. It must be made clear that in modern political language, the first meaning of republic, respublica, often is not a structure opposed to monarchy, but rather the political body as a whole. It is not by chance that Leibniz uses the expression République de l'Empire, Republic of the Empire, in Entre Athènes, Entre Philaret et Eugène. In any case, the previous remark does not lead to the belief that Respublica identifies with Civitas and thus with the reference to a specific state. The first is linked to the second, but it is not reducible to it, as it leaves the tension between individual good and common good open, recognizing the never-ending changes of political realities and situation. This notion not only presents a political characteristic It also connotes a metaphysical element, the Respublica Universi, or République des Esprits, of which God is chief. This matter can be analyzed in the same way as common good, which extends to politics, ethics, metaphysics, and knowledge. Now I'm coming to the end. The concept of republic also puts on a gnoseological significance, Respublica Literaria or République de Lettres. It emerges as a rational structure of communication, since, unlike Descartes, the knowing subject is not represented by a single isolated learned man, but rather by a collectivity of individuals that cooperate for common good. Not only is science a cultural attempt, it also assumes a political role in the broadest sense of the word, resulting in a strong bond between theory and praxis. The aim of general science is to improve individual and collective conditions. Leibniz recommended that the establishment of scientific societies should serve not only to promote pure science, but also to promote the application of science to manufacturing and commerce. As such, the notion of republic between politics and knowledge tries to explain the reference to the place of others as the true point of perspective, and thus as the impulse towards the common happiness of individuals, according to a constant, though uneasy and problematic, progress of political forms and types. Thank you.